7:47. Rolene Marks, a very good morning. How are you?
Okay, Tov. I'm good, and yourself? Schwitzing a bit in the heat here, but all good.
Right. Wow. Unbelievable that it's so hot there and we are so cold here. It's just very, very hard to imagine, but Israel certainly getting very hot this time of year. Very, getting very, very hot for Hamas as well. Can we please talk about the story? We skirted around it, didn't quite get to it the whole week. The second son of Hamas. Just give us the background. What is going on here?
Well, I think this is quite funny when Hamas have to do damage control on their PR. I mean, like, do Hamas have a PR wing, or do they hire people? Like, how are they going to do this? This is quite amusing to me. Anyway, people are very familiar with Hassan Youssef, or Mossab Hassan Youssef, who's the son of one of the co-founders of Hamas, Sheikh Hassan Youssef Senior, because, you know, you normally named the firstborn very similar to the father. And we're familiar, he's done a tour of the world, he speaks out. There was the very, very famous book, Son of Hamas, where he told his story about being in prison and eventually befriending the Israelis and eventually working for the Israelis. I mean, when I read the book the first time around, I thought, is this far-fetched? Do these things really happen? You know, is this a plot for an elaborate movie? But turns out it is the truth. And he has famously converted to Christianity, and he tours the world, he's been to South Africa, and he speaks about who Hamas is, what their intentions are, what their genocidal charter is, and his journey. Now this week, news has broken that one of the other sons, one of the Suhaib Youssef, he's one of the other sons, he's the brother of Mossab Youssef. He has come out, and he's also talking about Hamas. He's talking about how corrupt they are. He's talking about, you know, he's exposed to the media, and in fact, Israeli media, which is the first no-no. He's spoken about how corrupt and power-hungry they are, how they are spying on Fatah. I mean, even though Hamas have said that they are going to do a counter-campaign to this, I mean, we know this stuff. I just found it quite intriguing that it's coming from somebody who really, really has the inside track. And he talks about how Hamas members have eavesdropped on leaders on the Palestinian Authority from listening stations in Turkey. It's really, really quite intriguing. And how he got to tell his story is also quite interesting. He apparently got hold of the Palestinian Affairs correspondent for Israel's Channel 12 and approached them to tell his side of the story. And as you can imagine, this is something juicy. This is something that anybody working in media is going to want to get. And he also talks about how senior Hamas officials spend hundreds of dollars on expensive meals for themselves where they are in Turkey. So not only do we find out that senior Hamas members, as we know, are not in the country, but while many of their people live in the most dire, horrendous conditions and are trying in their droves to leave the Gaza Strip, they are in Turkey eating at and wining and dining and eating at very expensive restaurants.
It's incredible. I mean, the truth is that anybody that, as you said, follows the Middle East and follows the story properly knows what Hamas is about. The rest of the world and many countries, including South Africa, including the ANC here in South Africa, choosing deliberately, I think, to ignore the true nature of what this terror organization is. Do you think that this will have an impact, or will it just be ignored along with everything else that they are doing?
Well, it's quite extraordinary because it is making news headlines, or it is coming out in major mainstream news around the world. And of course, Hamas are now trying to do damage control. Apparently, they tried to contain this before it was even broadcast. They tried to go into crisis management mode, which I want to know how they do this, because as somebody who works in PR, not that I would offer them my services.
Yeah, thinking that.
And very often you have to go into crisis mode if
crisis management in PR is a very big area.
You try and contain it. Maybe you do something a little bit more covert, but it's actually quite funny because first they started with demonstrations outside Sheikh Hassan Youssef's home. Sheikh Hassan, I think, was assassinated long ago, and then they've tried to go on to or to have a social media campaign. I mean, can you imagine the hashtags? I mean, what hashtag would you put?
Incredible. It's actually unbelievable that they actually could be, that they're actually concerned about the PR. I mean, they blow people up. They say openly that they want to annihilate Israel. They want to rid Israel of all of its Jews. And, but they're concerned about PR in this regard.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, they're not to underestimate the long arms and and they'll carry on the resistance. And we could say, I mean, if they're going to try and improve their PR, they might want to start with a summer camp for children. I mean, it's summer now. It's Chofesh HaGadol in Israel, much to the delight of parents in Israel everywhere. But our kids will go to surfing camp and ballet camp and beach camp and whatever camp, and their kids will go to camp to learn how to shoot, to learn how to kill, to learn to aspire to be martyrs. I think if you're going to try and improve your public relations or your image, you're going to want to start there. Also, we're going to want to know what you do with the massive budget that comes into the Gaza Strip in terms of aid, which doesn't seem to be trickling down to the average person who's living without work, who's living without electricity, who's really, really struggling. I mean, come on.
Yeah, absolutely right. All right, and moving on to another subject, Eva Kaur has passed away. She's a Holocaust survivor. She died at the age of 85. She always spoke of forgiveness. Give us a bit of background about Eva Kaur.
Well, Eva Moses Kaur is probably one of the most well-known Holocaust survivors. She was a twin, and she was imprisoned in Auschwitz during the Shoah with her twin sister, and they were experimented on by Joseph Mengele, who's infamous with his experimentations. And you know, on the subject, but slightly off the subject, I was at a lecture last week on Holocaust medicine because, you know, I had no idea what Holocaust medicine actually entailed, and I learned something quite interesting, that at every camp where there were major selections, every person who conducted these selections was a doctor, which is quite frightening. So Cora and her twin were one of, I think it was at least 1,500 sets of twins who were experimented on. And after the war, she founded a museum called Candles, which stood for Children of Auschwitz's Nazi Deadly Lab Experiments Survivors. She was born in Romania, and after Auschwitz was liberated by the Soviets, she moved to Israel, and she actually served in Tzahal, in the Israeli army. She was a sergeant major in the engineering corps, and she married a fellow survivor, and they immigrated to the United States. And she's very, very well known because she was one of the first to really document her stories, to really speak of the stories. And in the last couple of years, she's become really quite famous, even more famous than she already was, because she testified at the trial of Oskar Gröning, who was, I think he was the bookkeeper of Auschwitz. Yeah. And, you know, very, very controversial images of her walking up to him and embracing him and saying, you know, it's important that we forgive, which is something that a lot of us cannot understand. but such is her legacy. And her legacy, as the Candles Museum, who've written in their statement on the announcement of her death, they've said, you know, the themes of Ava's life are apparent. We can overcome hardship and tragedy. Forgiveness can help us to heal, and everyone has the power and responsibility to make this world a better place. We hope Eva's story continues to change the lives of those who hear it for many years to come. And the museum's going to stay closed until sometime next week, I think, while people around the world mourn the death of this quite extraordinary woman.
And I think I read that she died in Poland. She was on a trip back to Poland for the museum, and that's where she passed away.
I mean, it's a horrible, horrible irony.
Yeah, yeah.
But yes, she passed away in Poland, and you know, may her memory be forever blessed. I think that to come out of hell and to advocate forgiveness is a superhuman strength. It really, really is.
Yeah, it's quite phenomenal, and as you say, it's and as they said, you know, that's even if everybody can't really understand it, and can't relate to that level of forgiveness, of being able to embrace a person that has been very involved in at least the recording and the management of this death industry, even if we can't relate to it, there's got to be something that we look at that and say, well, there's a lesson in here somewhere.
Absolutely. And you know, apart from the fact that we always talk about the importance of bearing witness, especially now as we are losing most of our survivors with age, and anti-Semitism rises horrendously, so too I think it's important that, you know, all the lessons, all the legacies that these incredible people have given us, we need to pass it on. It's the best way we can honor their memory is to pay it forward.
Absolutely right. Rolien Marks is about to go 8 o'clock. Thank you, as always. Very interesting, very informative. And we'll catch you next week. Hope you keep cool. We'll try and keep warm. And we'll catch you next week. Have a Shabbat Shalom and a great weekend.